Welcome to This Osteopathic Life. This is Dr. Amelia Beeke. I am honored to share with you the philosophy that has underscored my personal and professional life and explore how osteopathy truly is for the health of all things. I see these principles in action every day in my varied roles as physician, parent, athlete, writer, musician, coach, and entrepreneur, and hope they will light the way for the path to your best health. Please note that while I am a physician, this podcast is intended to share general information and encourage discussion about medicine, health, and related subjects. The content provided in this podcast and in any linked materials is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. Thank you for joining me for episode 7 of season 6 of This Osteopathic Life. We are here in the week of this episode, a couple days delayed, and finding that rhythm. I've designated Thursday as my podcast drop date, but I've had increased amounts of teaching and lecturing on that day, and practicing how much talking feels like it fits in is something I'm exploring. There are some shifts, and hopefully I will be able to adapt to that space. But I appreciate that you're here on this day, in this week, for this episode. And the thought that came to me earlier in the week in a discussion with a friend was this idea of responsibility. And we have the traditional spelling of that word, right? Responsibility, with the I's all intermixed in there. I often get to help my daughter with her spelling test words, and we had a lot of I in the middle of words recently. And just thinking about that idea, responsibility, and I talk about responsibility a lot in my programs when I look at the relationship of responsibility in terms of control and power. We talk about this equation. And the key and core concept for this is that there are things that we can control directly, right? And sometimes there are many fewer of those things than we would like. Sometimes there are many more of them than we might wish to admit. But noticing what that is. So if you're in a situation where you have a challenge or you have something upcoming or maybe a difficult conversation or you're entering into a new project at work, looking at what can I actually control here? And one thing we can always control, right, is ourselves, ideally, hopefully, right? And if we're needing time and space and skill building to be able to do so with more prowess, we can talk about that as well. And we can look at in our direct vicinity, right? What can we directly control? And I think the next step out from that is influence, right? So then we can influence things. We can't necessarily control them explicitly. And then there are things that we can kind of wish to have some method of shifting, changing. And those are oftentimes the spaces that it's difficult to let go of and admit. Our locus of control does not extend to there. And so we're thinking about that. And we're thinking about this idea of control. And that's such an interesting word, right? It can feel domineering, right? It can feel like you are forcing something. But if we can notice, if we're using it, wielding it appropriately for what is actually ours to control, our own responses, the actions that we take, right? The direct environment around us, I'm sitting in my room right now and I can see I can control like what is on the floor. If I make my bed each day, when I choose to brush my teeth, right? And those can seem so basic, but building that up to say, what can I control here in this moment? I can control whether I plug my computer in. I can control whether I record this podcast episode today, tomorrow, the next day. And you might think, well, Amelia, if you can control that, why did you not control that you put it into play on Thursday? And I didn't, right? We can look at that very directly. I could have, right? Were there 30 minutes in that day? There were. Did they match? Were there other things that took up that space in a different way? There were, right? So I chose, and we can look at that knowingly. We could look at that passively. We could have it consciously, subconsciously. So I controlled my time in that day. And now you might think, well, what about, right, when you're punching a clock and you have other responsibilities? Yes, and, you know, there are contracts, right? So you can control whether you sign the contract, whether you agree to continue with the contract. There are hours and expectations for work. You can control whether you show up, and you can notice that, right? There are people who control and don't show up. Like, that is within their choice. There can be consequences, and we've talked about this a little bit in the last couple episodes. And really distilling it down to all of those things which you can control. And like I say, if you end up with a list that seems like this is way too many things, I don't want to have to control all of these. And if you can also say, oh, well, man, I really want that one to be in this bucket, in this circle. And I do like to vision it as this circle, this locus of control. And whatever fits within that circle, right, of that line. And then there's the next sphere out, right? That can be your sphere of influence. So you can't control it directly, but you can, you know, offer, you can suggest, you can support, right? And other people, other external circumstances are going to do what they're going to do. And then one step out from that can be kind of like an intent, right? You can have some hope for what can happen there. And then beyond that is so many things, right, that are just happening in the world around us. And the goal with all of this, when we think about control and how this relates to responsibility, is if we take responsibility for that which we can truly control, our power goes up, right? So we have released this idea of taking responsibility for the circle of influence and the circle of intention and the circle of, man, it seems far off, but I wish there was something here. Imaginatory. That's a new word. The imaginative line. Maybe I'll draw a little sphere, make a graphic for this. If we can release that, you let go of trying to hold so much. And thinking of that visually, right, if you try to hang on to everything, and I've been there, sometimes in Costco, rarely so, but in Meijer here, right, just one of our local superstores here in Michigan, I don't go there often, and I'll go there for usually a specific thing, you know, that I don't get at the shop where I usually will get my groceries, for example. And oftentimes I'll think to myself, I'm just going to grab these few things because I don't get a cart, right? I can't overbuy. But usually I get more than I can hold in my arms and I need the basket. But if I try to hold all of these things, right, it can be exhausting. It can be difficult to manage. And thinking about that, if you're holding all these things versus if you can set down what is not in your direct circle of control, it becomes much more manageable. You can then do a better job of navigating and being responsible for those things. And you might notice, right, your leverage, your influence on that next sphere out, that ripple effect might actually improve because you're not struggling to make everything work in some certain way around you. And you're really focusing and doing well with what is in that circle of control. And some is that you get relief in an energetic plane, right? Thinking about it physically, if I'm holding all of these things, I'm able to set a few down and carry those, which are actually within my locus of control. I have physical relief, right? It's less to carry. It's more manageable. You can have emotional relief. If you're constantly looking to all these things that you want to work some certain way and you truly cannot directly control them, it just becomes exhausting, right? You're giving away so much energy. And I'm saying this, right? Raise my hand, still working on this, right? This is an active practice. And noticing when this happens for you, when you get wrapped up into things, and it can be for great reasons, right? There can be a really key and core purpose for wanting that to work differently. And it can be really difficult to say, there's nothing I can do here, right? And even that can sound defeatist. And if you can just say that same sentence again, there's nothing I can do here. You can say, oh, well, here is maybe not where my energy is meant to go. And when I talk with my physicians in my programs, we talk about burnout specifically. And we look at the causes of burnout, and they are 80% systemic and 20% individual. And we spend most of our time in our programs talking about the individual component. And you might think, well, what, right? 80%, you need to go there. Yes, and we need to go there. Yes, absolutely. And I am all for systems reform. I am a graduate of the Osteopathic Health Policy Fellowship and looking at big picture and policy. Yes, absolutely. And, right, those are big things. And we often don't have direct influence. It's often difficult to find out who does have direct influence. Who are the decision makers? Who holds the actual power, right? Who has the control? Who should be held responsible and held accountable for those things? Absolutely. I'm with you there 100%. And knowing that there's this 80% that we may not have direct influence over right now, maybe ever, bringing it in to what we can directly control builds up our power so that we can approach a portion of that 80% more effectively. We can say, you know what? I'm going to bring my energy in. I'm going to look at all these things I can control. So how can I shift things in my clinic? How can I shift things in my hospital? How can I shift things in the healthcare organization, right? So where can I have direct impact? And from that, right, what can I grow and expand and nurture and leverage? So we can begin to move the needle, begin to kind of put a lever, I love that visual, under the boulder of the 80% and get it to start moving. And as you build up that strength and that power within your own locus of control, you gain new skills and you might expand that sphere of influence. Again, I see this active graphic happening. You'll inspire me to share that and get it out to all of you, that we can build our capacity that way versus, right, compared to when we are expending energy in all these different places at that 80% without as much capacity or clarity, right, it is energy that can oftentimes go into the void, into a vacuum, essentially. And so for me, for you, for my program participants, being able to say, how can we, right, conserve that energy in such a way that is more purposeful, that it has more power, right? And we can bring that forward. So we're looking at that as taking responsibility for that which you can actually control, developing your power, developing your strength, building that skill set, shifting perhaps those spheres of influence. And maybe you don't, right? Maybe you stay within that circle. But energetically, and when I am in a better practice around this and able to do this, it is a very different experience. To say, I can notice that, I can appreciate it, I can draw attention to it, I can speak to the people who might have direct control. So you're not necessarily abandoning it and never looking there. But you're taking this one step back, right? You're dialing it back in such a way that you aren't attempting in a futile manner to shift things that you can't. And that can sound like resignation. We talk about acceptance in our program as well. And there's often that confabulation that if I accept something, right, I'm giving up, I am condoning it. And it's very much not that. A lot of times it feels much more like a regrouping, kind of like shoring up the line, right? Bringing the troops back together, reforming, right, and reapproaching what you can do. So that's the responsibility, control, power, relationship. Again, work on putting that together in a visual because it really does automatically pop up that way for me in my brain, right, in that imagery that I see when I talk about it. And if we look at responsibility from the pure dictionary standpoint, the quality or state of being responsible, which always feels like such a lame way to offer up a definition. It's like you can't use the word to create the definition. But it does talk about moral, legal, or mental accountability. And so accountability, that word sometimes can feel even more meaningful, purposeful than when we say hold someone responsible versus hold someone accountable. And I was actually just in a conversation with my original accountability partner from the start of the pandemic. I was in an entrepreneurial group then, and we were given the opportunity. I wouldn't say we were required, but we had the choice. So it was within my control to engage in this relationship. And it was fantastic. And we have engaged in different conversations and course participation over the years and shared similar spaces in writing and coaching and different spaces in our clinical specialties and just having that common thread. And I was reconnecting the other day just to touch base and see how things were going and thinking about that, right? The accountability and having someone, some means of a check-in of saying what is happening for you and helping you to take that self-responsibility through the act of accountability. And we think about this word, right? We're coming into, you know, this next election and thinking about who's responsible. How are we holding people accountable? And how do we engage in those practices? Responsibility also has reliability and trustworthiness linked to it, right? So that quality or state of being responsible. So thinking about accountability, reliability, trustworthiness, what does that look like? What does it feel like? How do you identify that? Who do you identify as that? How in yourself do you see those characteristics come forward? Interestingly, to me, the second definition under here was something for which one is responsible, and it lists burden. And that's so interesting as well. And like we talked about, if you begin to list what you're actually in control of, and it might be a really long list, and you might think, oh my God, I'm responsible for all these things, and I can actually control them, and it can feel like a burden. But you might also look at that list, and this is where that power of perspective and thought comes through, and you might think, wow, look at all of these spaces, right, for which I'm responsible and which I can truly control, and the opportunities that are here for me to have meaningful influence, to lead by example, to support myself, right, to make some significant change. All of that can be really profound. And that, again, can be the same list, right? The specifics aren't changing, but how we interpret them can. I'd like to pivot then and look at responsibility in a little different way. And you have probably heard this, or maybe you haven't, but this one was first presented to me, and it was in a coaching call years ago. And we talk about responsibility, right? If we break down that word to its parts, response, R-E-S-P-O-N-S-E, ability, right? We're taking out the I here into my spellers from the elementary school when we do our practice tests, like ignore this, right? Don't begin to think responsibility has an A in it. It doesn't, the whole word, that compound word, but responsibility, A-B-I-L-I-T-Y, are the two parts of what that means. And so think about that first component, response. And we look a lot at reaction in my coaching programs. And a lot of times reactivity and reaction to feelings is what we're scared of. A reason we avoid certain feelings is because we're concerned that our inherent reaction is going to be problematic. anger is always a prime example. We experience the feeling of anger. We're afraid we're going to yell, might throw something, right? We might create this disconnection with the people around us. And noticing that we can also have a response to anger. We can recognize anger, right? We can say, oh, right, what is it here to tell me? And it might be, right, that you write a strongly worded letter to your representative in the government, right? Anger can drive sometimes that desire to hold accountability in an appropriate professional way, right? We can look at as well the ability to respond to anger and say, oh, I'm going to hold a boundary here, right? This is telling me something has been violated and it's going to inform me to do this. And you might think, well, are you shifting and acting out of anger? Yes, and, right? It's quite possible that there are different responses that happen from a particular feeling. And so thinking about your ability to respond and think about the ways that you respond, right? So you can respond in words, written words, spoken words. Written words can look like a text or an email or a post or a tweet, all of these different ways that we can respond in this day and age. Maybe a handwritten letter. Perhaps it's a voicemail. You know, thinking about all those ways we can respond verbally and in writing, right? So with words, putting that forward. We can respond physically, right? And that might automatically bring up the sense of, oh, right, we're not going to get aggressive. But even just noticing body language, right? That communication there is you can respond, right? You can have this way that you receive something and how it shows up, right? You might stand taller. You might cross your arms in front of you. You might furrow your brow, the different facial expressions. I happen to be getting a lot of sign language in my social media feeds. Not entirely sure how or why and how the algorithms work. I don't know. It's fascinating. I've always really been intrigued by and interested in sign language. I am not fluent by any means. I have a few basic signs. I can spell the alphabet. But just seeing the communication in the expression that's involved. Yes, right? It's communication through signs made with the hands. But really, right? The facial expressions that go along with it are so powerful. And it speaks to me that we would all do better, right? If we could harness some elements of that in the way that we look at and make eye contact with and utilize more of ourselves in our expressivity. And that's for me too. When I watch my videos back, I think it's a very neutral expression that happens and how to build on that. So, you know, think about the response and how our body, how our facial expressions offer up that response. A response can look like action, right? You might do something in response to what is happening, what is said or spoken to a current situation that's happening. And that response might be, right, that you put up a boundary, thinking about in your neighborhood. I live where houses are immediately next to one another. And so a response to having puppies, right, was to put up a fence because we needed space that was demarcated, right, that was protected and also wasn't invading on a neighbor's space as well. And so thinking how we can respond through our actions. And then thinking how we respond in the resources that we have. So we always have response ability, right, the capacity within ourselves that we do have some of those renewable resources. And I won't say infinite because, right, our energy can be influenced by things that are happening around us, again, how we manage our thoughts, our feelings. And sometimes, and I've been there many times actually more recently, where it feels like the ability to respond is just drained. And so no, yes, you do always have control over your own response, but also be mindful that that can be, right, an exhausted resource. And when there is that depletion, and we talk about filling up our cup, right, things that restore and rejuvenate, and that could be sleep and nutrition and self-care and connection and activity, all of those different ways that we can fill that up. But also it can be depleted. And so your ability to respond, right, your responsibility, your response capacity can be less in certain times and stages. And it might be, my response right now is like, I can't. Right, make a direct response. I have to pause. Or my response is one word, or my response is no thank you, or my response is maybe next time, right? So just see how your response can be influenced by the energy that you have. We can look at more external resources, and we can look at finances, let's say, right? So a response to something might be, right, that you donate in support of something, or that you can, you know, craft something to help. And if you have, right, different financial capacity, your response ability is different. And even there, we can look at discrepancies. We can look at equity. We can look at, you know, influence and how that can shift because certain people have different resources that influence their ability to respond to something. And then we start to see, oh, right, how does that impact their sphere of influence? And here, I'm offering you more points of consideration than direct answers. And that is the element of coaching. And that is oftentimes simply the element of life, noticing these things and see how the noticing of it, right, can give you more of a clue as to your possible impact. Your response can also be influenced by resources around you, such as, right, your general things like food or your shelter situation or your job security. All of those can shift the way that you can respond. Thinking about maybe you're seeking employment or you're seeking work in a different way, and you can be more discretionary, right, with responses to things based on what reserve do you have, like how is your current job working, what does your schedule allow for, what other things are influencing your time. So see how your response is influenced by those pieces. And as we get to kind of look at all these different spheres of influence on your response, still remembering, right, my ability to respond within myself, right, is a space to which I can return. Being mindful that it looks different moment to moment, right, situation to situation, time to time in our lives. But that part is for me, of me, within me. Let's look at the ability piece. And we see how, right, these resources affect your ability to respond. So we're talking about it in many ways. But I want to really look at this from the perspective of how do you acknowledge your ability to respond? And this comes back to the idea of control. Do you believe, are you aware, is it within the auspices of possibility that you have the capacity, you have the ability to respond? And are there situations, I always tend to look at this, sorry, that osteopathic perspective from the health lens to say, is there a time when you really saw an excellent response, right, by your determination, that you felt really strong in what it was you had to offer, that you were confident in how you presented it, that it was clear to you what you were going to say, and then go to that moment. And this, in the clinical realm for me, is when I talk to patients about, like, when did you feel health, right? When did you feel healthy? What did that look like? What was happening? What did that feel like? Well, how would you describe it? So they can reconnect to what health is for them. And sometimes it's, I don't know, never, or really long time ago. But if we could find those threads and give that reminder that this has existed for me and go there. So if you go to a time when your ability to respond was premium, right? You had the capacity to be contemplative and thoughtful in your response, and you felt that you were totally full as far as your internal resources and the external capacity around you, right? And what was that like? What was happening? And you could look at all those factors. Yes, absolutely. And you could also look at, what was I feeling then? What was my internal narrative in that time? Right? What was supporting me in that optimal ability to respond? And can I draw on that? Can I draw on those pieces that are internal, the thoughts I had, the feelings that really drove me to make this clear, concise, confident response, right? And even there, I'm feeling confident. Why? I was telling myself, like, I know what I'm going to do here. I trust myself to follow this through. And those thoughts often don't have anything to do with a specific external factor. And I invite you to take on this exercise to say, go to a time I felt my ability to respond was at its maximum capacity, right? It was premium. And this is what was happening. And then see what part of those are the external circumstances that aren't within your control. And then come into the space of, how was I feeling? You might think, I was feeling responsible. Well, just like we said, let's not use the word and the definition. So can you get more kind of descriptive there and pull out a feelings wheel? Maybe you're feeling curious or powerful or so feeling I want to put in here for this, like, important or necessary, but not in this kind of self-aggrandizing way, but in this, like, just driven, this moral imperative, right, that was really present for you and thinking, right, this has to be done. I'm the one to do this. I have a solution. I'm willing to be right. I'm willing to be wrong, right? And just see what those narratives can be and notice that when you really sift them through, they don't have anything that says, oh, I felt able to respond because I had $1 million, right? Or I felt able to respond because, right, I was the CEO. And those might be true, right? Those parts might be true, but bring it one level back. And I would offer to you my challenge. I won't wager. There's been a lot of talk of gambling recently, and I'm not willing to wager this, but I'd be willing to inquire with you, right, that there are narratives within there that have nothing to do with the external circumstances that you can draw forward into other situations. So when you feel more depleted, when you feel less sure, you can pull those forward and begin to build the skills in your capacity and your ability to respond. And then because we're not neglectful, of pathology or disease, even in osteopathic medicine, go to the time you felt very unable to respond, right? So you felt your capacity was low, bleak, non-existent, and you felt powerless in that time, really is what we're going to. And just be with that. And it probably doesn't feel great, and that's okay. And I'm here with you. And again, this can be a great exploration in a coaching session to say, I felt completely, right, hopeless, powerless. There was nothing I could do here. And go to that. And we're not going to change it. We're not going to gaslight ourselves out of that. We're just going to go there and even just acknowledge, right? Be like, yeah, that was difficult. And I can see where it felt very disempowering. And yeah, so many of those factors, right? If we list them out, maybe one thing was in your circle of control, and so many were in those outer spheres, and so many were way outside all of the spheres of direct influence and control. And so it can feel like there's nothing I can do here. So my ability to respond is so limited. And that can totally be true. And again, we're not going to change the facts of what was, and we're not going to change what happened, but we can look at that example and say, okay, in a situation that feels really bleak, and my ability to respond feels almost non-existent, right? I have no resources here, internal or external. What is there for me here? And your instinct might be nothing, right? There's nothing I can do. And you might stop and say, okay, right? There's nothing I can do. And just like we said, we can say there's nothing I can do and hang our heads and be defeated and resigned. And if we say, well, there's nothing I can do, and this comes back, right, to the Serenity Prayer, to the Dalai Lama telling us, right, worry is of no use, right? Because if you can't control it, worry has no part here. And if you can't control it, like, stop worrying and control it. And that can sound flippant. That could be a much more easier said than done situation. But just for a moment, say, there's nothing I can do here, right? Why or should I continue to expend all of this energy trying to figure out what I can? And now the counterpoint to that, and I think I've shared this here on the podcast. I know I've shared it in some of my more recent teaching sessions. In this journal, I have that Alan Watts quotes are kind of the prompt for each day. One is, right, you find the solution when you get more and more intimately aware of and educated about the problem, right? So you study the problem and the solution presents itself. And so this one, when there's nothing I can do here, consider if you've been seeking a solution, which is totally okay. Totally okay, appropriate. Part of the practice of medicine, right? Trying to find a solution, a treatment. And sometimes one does not seem to present itself. And so talking like to medical scientists, you know, thinking about you, they spend much of the time thinking about the problem, right? The diagnosis, the pathology. And so what if instead of seeking for it to get better, right? And even there too, this was one of the profound moments for me in my education in osteopathic medicine with my dear colleague, who said, right, the true osteopathy, right, this practice of osteopathic medicine, and really medicine, and really life and health, is to be with the patient in that diagnosis and that pathology, in the withering fields. That's the quote from osteopathic medicine that we speak to. Not to water the fields or to rotate the fields, right, to just to be there, to be aware, to be present, to acknowledge, to accept. And again, not to give up on, but there's something about aligning with that moment, saying, yeah, this is how it is right now. And we can look at that from a very academic standpoint and study it, right? Get very clear on the details. Sometimes an energetic standpoint, just be in that space. An emotional standpoint, right? Offer this empathy, even if you can't totally know, right, what the experience is. And so to sit within, beside, among the problem. And that word, even there, is charged. But in this situation, there's nothing I can do. I say, well, I'm gonna sit here for a minute. And you might look around, or you might close your eyes, you might look within. You might look at and notice what is happening here. And there's nothing I can do. What if the thing I can do is to see that and take off any pressure of trying to do something? And when you take that off, I picture it like removing, right, armor, taking off the shackles. You say, okay, right there, that's it. There's nothing I could do here. And there can be this act of surrender. We've talked about that in previous episodes. And I won't say without fail, because I don't think anything is 100%. Right, life and so many variables. But just sinking into it and saying, well, this is what is. And There is nothing in the immediate purview that I'm going to do to change this profoundly or even at all. But what I can do is be with it in it. And you might then see more clarity on what is happening, what is intimate, what is maybe the tangle in that problem. I think about this. My daughter's necklace will often get tangled. Jasmine, untangle it. And it's a gentle process. And you can't always really see the path. You kind of have to hold it. You can shuffle things around. You can examine it. But the most success I've had is just gently, right? Giving it a little more space, like pulling on this one thread and seeing what the result is. And then you move it a little bit and see if it can kind of fall through back into a released space. And from that, there's nothing I can do here becomes, well, there's nothing I have to do here, right? And I'm going to let go of trying to do something here. And I'm going to accept, right, that I'm willing for there to be nothing that I can do here. I embrace it. And if it comes through, that is the thing you can do there, is to be with doing nothing. That's something, right? All the way around. And if, because you're no longer trying to strong arm something to happen, there may be a different lens of clarity that comes through. And maybe it's not you doing the something there. Maybe it's someone else, or maybe it's an ask, or maybe it's a connection or a leverage, an allyship. I don't know. And we're not seeking that, right? We're not forcing it. And I think about that in treatment sessions with patients. You might have this really restricted area, and it seems like everything you've tried isn't working. So maybe it's, let me just be with what is. And maybe it'll change, and maybe it won't. But forcing it hasn't worked. So let me try to understand, why are you here? And I've told this story before of the patient that came with rib pain, seeking, right, manual treatment for this rib pain. And it was actually diagnostic of a visceral, you know, pathology happening. And if we're just trying to fix it, and you might have fixed it, and it might have gotten better, but it would probably come back, right, because it was related to a visceral component. Instead of saying, there's nothing I could do here, but maybe the thing I could do was notice it and say, well, what else are you telling me? And so there's nothing I can do to treat this rib pain away directly, right, from a manual treatment. But, and, right, there is something here. I can listen and I can gain some understanding and I can point to, maybe it's not me to do the something here, right? I can point toward that. It's just seeing how that responsibility can look. And I want to be very clear. It's not suggesting, right, that you're now shifting and saying, though, you must do this, right? We're not talking about forcing someone else as what our active responsibility is, but that listening, that sitting with, that tuning into can be so powerful. So on this day, in this moment, and going forward, consider your response ability, those elements of influence, and how you might find some relief in letting go, in being with, in acceptance, and how actually your power might increase significantly. This is Dr. Amelia Beakey with This Osteopathic Life. Thank you for listening.